are so glad that you are listening to the Mission Point Community Church podcast. It's our prayer that this helps you grow in your relationship with Jesus and encourages you to show and share the love of Jesus everywhere you go. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's dive into the message.
This morning, I have the privilege of continuing our summer show up series. And today we're going to lean into the idea of courage. Courage. If you are going to chase after Jesus and lean into the things he's calling you to, it will require some courage. The world we're living in right now needs a movement of the courageous. When things are not easy and the darkness seems to be winning, God is raising up a movement of those who would be courageous. What might that look like for us? And when I think about courage, I think about the Old Testament story that you've heard of, whether you grew up in the church or whether you did not grow up in the church. And it is the great epic story of David and Goliath. If you've never heard that story, man, again, I'm always excited for somebody who gets to hear some of these things for the very first time. But for most of us, it's going to be a familiar story, if not one of the most well-known stories in biblical history. So we are going to take some time to walk through the entire story and see what principles we might be able to mine when it comes to courage. If you have a Bible, we're going to be in 1 Samuel chapter 17. You can turn to 1 Samuel chapter 17. And again, we're going to pause and make observations as we work our way. Be scared when I say what's about to come out of my mouth through these 50 some odd verses this morning, starting at verse number 1, 1 Samuel 17. Here we go. Now, the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at Socor in Judah. They pitched camp at Ephes-Damim between Socor and Azekah. Saul and the Israelites assembled and camped in the valley of Elah and drew up their battle lines to meet the Philistines. The Philistines occupied one hill and the Israelites occupied another hill with the valley in between them. And with that, we are set up for the greatest fight in biblical history, arguably. So there's two nations. There's the Philistines and there's the Israelites. They are sworn enemies. They hate each other. The Philistines, they really, 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 really want the mountain region that the Israelites are living on at the moment. But instead of just walking over, knocking on the door nicely and asking, they decide we're going to assemble a ferocious army, invade this land, kill everybody, and just take it. When Saul, the king of Israel, hears about this, he makes a preemptive move. He rallies his own troops and he rushes out to meet the Philistines. When these two enemy nations finally see each other, one nation is on one hill and the other nation is on the other hill with the valley in between them. And so begins a 40-day standoff. Now, the reason it's a 40-day standoff is because neither one of these armies wants to make the first move. This is basic rules in the art of war. You never want to be the army that is fighting uphill while your enemy is punching down. You will lose every time, regardless of how skilled your army happens to be. And so with neither of them wanting to risk losing by climbing uphill, they hold their posts and no one makes a move. And immediately, this story gifts us a principle for the wars in our own worlds. And here's principle number one. If you're a note writer, if you want to bump the person next to you who writes notes or remembers to tell you what you might forget, here's the first principle that emerges. Be sure to check your position. Check your position. I just came to tell you that the majority of battles that you are losing in your life are most likely tied to the position from which you are trying to fight the battles. I'm going to try harder. I'm going to work with more vigor and more force. But if you are fighting a battle from the wrong position, you are typically going to be losing those battles. And for most of us, that explains why we are losing some of the battles that we are losing. We are fighting the battle for our peace while we are just on news cycle, repeat, repeat all day long. We're fighting battles for our joy while we are just doom scrolling social media on the party in the comparisons of what I don't have and who's better. And we wonder why that doesn't seem to be a battle we're gaining any ground on. We are fighting this battle for purity, but we continue to go park out in the country where no one can see us. We continue to set up these dates like, hey, come over. No one's here. It's 10 p.m. and we can just have some drinks and we'll see what happens. Pray for us, guys. We're struggling. You are fighting from the wrong position. Snapchatting at 2 a.m. in the morning and you wonder, why can't I? You are fighting for your health, but you continue to shop while you're hungry. And you wonder why you keep coming home with 72 boxes of Snickers. It is oftentimes not a matter of willpower. It's often a matter of weak position. Check your position. How are you fighting and from what position? You're fighting for your mental health, but you insist on secrecy because you've bought into the lie of the stigma and that there's something wrong with me and I ought to have shame around this. So I'm not going to tell anybody, but I wonder why the dial won't move in a direction. Check your position. You might unnecessarily be fighting hill. Verse number 4, a champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, he came out from the Philistine camp. His height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield bearer went ahead of him. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why do y'all come out and line up for battle? Why? Am I not a Philistine? And are you not the servants of Saul? Let's do this. Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he's able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us." Then the Philistine said, "This day I defy in your faces the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." Now, I don't know about you, but I think this is kind of cool. I think it's very efficient, and I think it's very humane. Instead of thousands and thousands of us getting all dirty and dusty and sweaty and dead and bloody and stuff, why don't we just play a massive game of Red Rover, right? And then we'll send someone over, you send someone over, mano a mano, winner takes all. Let's get ready to rumble. The Israelites are like, "We're listening. We're listening." And the Philistines are like, "Great, Red Rover. We send Goliath on over." Who's Goliath? Nope, we're not listening at all. Because mano y monster is not going to work for us. Historians suggest that Goliath stood 9 feet 9 inches tall. A monster of a human being who spent the vast majority of his life mastering the art of snacking on regular-sized human beings in battles like this. He was masterful at hand-to-hand combat. This was a scary, scary dude. And so he gets up there and he just starts to defy, talking some of the craziest trash that you can imagine to the Israelites, because he knows no one can beat him in hand-to-hand combat. He says some of the most emasculating things I cannot even imagine. He's you wussy boys. I'm sure he tells some yo mama jokes, and he just coaxes them for 40 days. And those boys, they just stay put on top of the mountain. To which I say, that's smart. That's a very smart move, if you ask me. Very smart. I recommend that very, very greatly. That raises maybe a second principle that we can steal in the conversation about courage. And here's the principle that we can borrow from the Israelite boys. Sometimes you've got to pick your battles. Sometimes you've just got to pick your battles. Sometimes you got to stay put. See, because it's easy for us to read this story and we join Goliath's voice in mocking these Israelites and are like, I cannot believe all the stuff he's saying about y'all. Don't you guys have, like, what would you have done? Right? You would have peed your pants just like they did. Now, I'm built different, so that's different. But for y'all, it would be piddly widdly, just like them. It's very easy to look at what they did and be like, if I were there, no, you would not have done anything differently. And this was a smart move, because sometimes you've just got to learn to pick your battles. Don't be a dummy McDummy pants. Sometimes it is smart to be scared. You have got to sometimes know when you are outmanned and it is foolish to fight. Here's what I'm saying. Some of y'all are losing battles because you are stepping into a ring with an enemy who is bigger and stronger than you, and he is better at this. Sometimes you've just got to know you're not that guy. You're not that strong, Kendrick. Be humble. Sit down and live. Goliath is a 10-foot giant who has mastered the art of hand-to-hand combat. The smart thing is, don't fight him in hand-to-hand combat. But he's talking trash. Let him. When I was a kid, I still remember, and I've told some of you this story, I got punched in the mouth, like right here. I can almost still feel it, like so hard by a kid who was twice my size. I'm talking like so hard that I started to see snow in Africa. And that happened because my friends were all like, oh, you're going to let him talk to you like that? And I should have said yes. It is not worth dying over some yo mama jokes. But oh no, the manly pride in me was like, you talking to, I was dizzy for days. I don't recommend it. What I am saying is there are times when it is just wise and smart to be scared. Okay, let me make it a little more plain, because here's what I'm saying. The devil loves to fight and defeat God's people like this, when we are just not smart enough to be scared. And he takes us out by yakking to convince us to step out of our strength in Jesus Christ and to come down onto his turf to fight a battle on his terms. So he can kill us. Did anyone else think about the fact that the Philistines want what the Israelites already have. Did anyone think about the fact that Goliath is trying to lure the Israelites to fight him for the chance to keep something they already own? That's what the devil, he will taunt us and taunt us to come out of a position where we have all we need in the person of Jesus Christ to start to fight for things that we already have. No, I'm a man. And so your boys will start to mock you like, oh, Mr. Christian man, not tough enough to go to the strip club. Can't handle it. No, I'm a man. I can stay out of it. Sometimes it's smart to be scared. He wants you to fight on his turf in a way that's at, oh, look at her, Miss Goody Two-Shoes. She never does anything fun. Bet you she'll never send us those pictures. What? I'm not a goody two-shoes. I'll prove it to you. Don't prove anything. Just pick your battles. He will use things to lure you out of a position of strength for the opportunity to give up something you don't even need. Oh, you can't handle little underage liquor. I can't handle little underage going to jail. I don't want to do that. Oh, you're too scared to call out your uncle about his spending habits. He's my like fifth uncle, 12 generations removed. Why should I get involved in that family drama? Oh, you're just scared. Everyone else is speaking up. You don't want to speak up. You don't want to raise your... No, I'm good. Thank you. I'll stay right here. Sometimes it's smart to be scared and to pick your battle. Satan loves to lure us to give up what we already have for something we don't need. He did the same thing with Jesus after Jesus 40 days on his mountain. I bet you can't show yourself to be God by jumping off this and trying this. I bet you won't. And Jesus didn't. I hope I'm learning more and more. Some of the battles that we are losing because we're stepping into arenas to fight on the enemy's terms when it's just like, no, let people say what they say. Stay off of social media. Well, I heard what they said about me at work. Great. No, but I can't. Just let it go. Sometimes the smartest thing to do, pick your battles, let it go. Why are we talking about this? David and Goliath. Verse number 17. It says, now Jesse said to his son David, there he is, take this ephah of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread for your brothers and hurry to their camp. Take along these 10 cheeses to the commander of their unit. See how your brothers are and bring back some assurance from them. They are with Saul and all the men of Israel in the valley of Elah fighting against the Philistines. This is the problem with Instagram, man. You can make it seem like you're fighting when you're just playing Scrabble on a hill. Dad said, my boys are fighting out there. I'm like, no one's fighting, Pops. But anyway, David is probably about 17 years old at this point. And he ends up in the epicenter of this epic story because his dad asks him to run this thankless errand for him. Now I'm talking to you kids. Listen to your parents, and you may end up in an epic story as well. You're welcome, parents. Verse number 20. Early in the morning, David left the flock in the care of a shepherd. He loaded up and set out as Jesse had directed him to do. He reached the camp as the army was going out to its battle positions, shouting the war cry, because apparently they had a war cry. Israel and the Philistines were drawing up their lines facing each other. David left his things with the keeper of the supplies, ran to the battle lines, and asked his brothers how they were. As he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance, and David heard it. Whenever the Israelites saw the man, they all fled from him in great fear. This is borderline amusing to me. So apparently every morning the Israelites would still go through the ritual of gathering and marching into to battle, raising their brave battle cry, talking about, we believe that. We believe that we will win. And Goliath comes. And Goliath has come. We believe that. We just peed our pants. And then they would run back to their Scrabble region whenever they would see him. But it didn't stop them from going through the motions every morning, talking the talk and playing the game. May this never be a description of the church. But come on. This is where the story takes a turn. It says that David heard what Goliath said, and something burned on the inside of that boy. Woo! Hey guys, so Dad wanted to know how you are. What did he say? What did he say? And now he can't unhear it. That boy is fired up. And the moment he hears the words, he just knows, I'm getting in a fight today. I'm going to fight that guy today. It is on. David doesn't even know about all of the signing bonuses that Saul has promised to anyone who would beat Goliath. He has no idea about any of those things. Because Saul said, whoever kills this guy gets to marry my daughter. Whoever kills this guy never has to pay taxes. Whoever kills this guy is going to get a lot of money. I don't want to judge. I don't know what Saul's daughter looked like. But just saying, 40 days, no takers. But anyway, so David, that's not nice. David decides he's getting in a fight today. If you read what comes next, it is everybody trying to talk some sense into that teenage boy. Don't do it. Hold your position. Pick your battles. His brothers are like, go home and let the real men work. What are you even doing here? And they actually mock him. Saul's like, this guy is going to kill you. He has been mastering the art of murder since you were a fetus. You cannot beat this guy. Go home. And David is like, I hear you, your highness. But first, let me kick his highness. And then I promise I'll go home. But I have some business to take care of today. I've been working my whole life for this moment right here. Verse 34. But David said to Saul, your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. David is giving a little resume now. And when a lion or a bear came and carried off sheep from the flock, I went after it. I struck it and rescued the sheep from its mouth. And when it turned on me, I seized that sucker by its hair. I struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine. Ooh-wee! Let's go, David. And man, David invites us to consider what it might look like for each of us to find our fight. Matter of fact, I came to tell somebody in the house, you've got to find your fight. Or you better find your, in fact, let's take a second. The person next to you may be sleeping. Just tell them, find your fight. Whoever it is, tell the person next to you, find your fight. I saw a mom telling her baby, like, find your fight. I like it. I believe everyone in this room who believes in Jesus has a fight to fight, and you need to find it so you can fight it. And that will require some courage. If you are called to chase after Jesus and to step into the darkness, to carry out his calling and to live on mission, you are going to have to find your fight. Matter of fact, if you've not found your fight, have you even started living this thing out yet? Find your, do you know what your fight is? David didn't know what was true about every other dude there, but he knew this was his fight. Not because his feelings were hurt, not because his ego was bruised, not because his pride was wounded, but because this guy was defying the God he loved, and he was disgracing his people. And even at the age of 17, David knew when that happens, it's time for me to fight. But I thought you said pick your... I know what I said. The enemy would love for you to spend all of your energies fighting fights that are not yours from position of weakness. And even if you win, what was the point of it? But there is a fight the kingdom of light has called you to issue to the kingdom of darkness. And the question is, do you know what your fight is? You better find your fight. But how will you know? Here's a principle, free of charge. We'll put it up here on the screen. What is the thing that displeases God, disgraces people, and disturbs you? What is the thing that displeases God? You know he's made it clear in his word. It hurts, it dehumanizes, it denigrates, it devalues in some way, it disgraces people, and it disturbs you. Find that thing, and come on, David, you may have found your fight. What is that thing? Or everyone else can hear it and just keep moving. But every time you hear it, you're like, what did they say? What did I just see? It burns on the inside of you. Like, this cannot continue to happen. This is not okay. And by the way, the people around you typically know what it is because you whine about it all the time. You get mad about it all the time. You even try and vote to fix it all the time. And I actually want to suggest that if you don't get in touch with some courage and you step into this fight, you are going to be miserable to live with. You're going to get angrier and more bitter and more critical, and you will be sour and salty till you find your fight and the courage to step into it and start to carry it out. What is the thing that you know displeases God, it disgraces people, and it disturbs you? You can't even. With whatever that thing might be. For some of you, it's misogyny. Everyone at work is like, ha, 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 about these jokes about women, but you hear it and you're like, I know what God has said. She is made in his image. And whenever I see a woman being mistreated just for being a woman, woo, somebody stop me. For some of you, it's kids. You see a baby or a child who is being mistreated or underserved, and you're like, nah, that is not okay. And it's not just a regular, nah, that is not okay. It bothers you to tears, to anger. You feel it when you see it. And this is what I mean. Your family's like, oh my goodness, do we have to stop every time? You see someone treated as less because of the color of their skin, and you're just, oh no. For some of you, it may be like, I see a nation strike another nation in war, and everyone just keeps scrolling and onto the next news cycle, but I cannot. It just devastates me on the inside, and everything in me feels like I can't do anything about it, but I feel the need to do something because this is not okay. Maybe you see people God loves who are struggling to put food on their kids' tables, and that just breaks you apart on the inside. Something has to shift. Something has to change. That kind of hurt has to be pushed back. Maybe for some of you, it's to see human beings treated as though their immigration status determines their value as a human being. And everyone else is arguing about the legality and the politics of it. And you're like, those are people. And it fires you up. For some of you, it's to watch the abuse of power. People in positions of influence taking advantage of people with a little bit less. And you just can't with that. I'm finding out, by the way, that is one of the things that fires me up. I didn't know. I'm learning. What is the thing that displeases God and disgraces, dishonors, denigrates, dehumanizes people that you cannot stomach? You might have found your fight. And while everyone else may be content to line up every Sunday morning at church on the pretty battle lines, and while everybody else may be content to just talk about it and to sing the chants and to say nice stuff about it, you're like, something in me feels the need to step out and do something about it. And that will always require courage. But first, you got to know your fight. You got to know your fight. And everyone in this room has been called to push back darkness, to pick a fight with the kingdom of darkness, if you're a follower of Jesus. And the fight may be gigantic. That's what I love about this story. I'm like, and Goliath was monstrous. And that's one of the ways the enemy intimidates many of us from fighting the fight that God has placed on the inside of us. Because you're like, what am I supposed to do about a global war? I'm just one person. And that issue feels gigantic. And I'm telling you, welcome to the kingdom of light, where giants fall in the name of Jesus. In fact, the more intimidating, the more daunting, I'm like, the better. That might be it. That might be the thing. Because listen, if it was easy enough, it wouldn't be scary and you wouldn't need courage and anyone could do it. People will think you're crazy. Your family will think you're just trying to be nosy. People call it political. They will accuse you of being on a side. Come on, David. That requires courage to be like, I appreciate what you're saying, Saul. I appreciate what my brothers are saying. I appreciate what everyone else is saying. But God has said, this is a fight I have to step into. What's your fight? Eventually, Saul concedes. He's like, this kid has found this fight, and he is going to fight the giant with me or without me. But at least put on my armor, David. At least carry my sword. David tries it on, is like, too clunky. Slows me down. Hard pass. No, thank you. But David, if this dude hits you with his sword or he stabs you with his killer apparatus thingy, it's going to hurt much less if you're wearing this. Sheepskin won't help you very much. Dave's like, no, I'm good. But if he picks you up and hurls you to the earth from 20 feet up in the air, fewer bones in your body will break if you wear this stuff. David's like, no, I'm solid. Thank you very much. No, thanks. You need a sword if you're going to kill him. Dave's like, I'm good. Verse 40, then he took his staff, the stick in his hand, and he chose five smooth stones from the stream, and he put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, he approached the Philistine.
Yeah, sticks and stones, man.
Verse 41. Meanwhile, the Philistine with his shield bearer in front of him kept coming closer to David. And another principle of war emerges. And I'm telling you, you've got to know your strengths. You have got to know your strengths. When you find your fight, you will find that God has put on you and in you the weapons you need to win that particular war. You better know your strengths. You better discover your gifts. And they're not going to be the gifts that work for other people. It's not going to be the stuff that is conventional and the way everyone else does it. He is going to call you to a fight. And once you accept, you are going to discover he has put in my pouch 5 stones. And I'm telling you, you've got to know your strength. Now I'm asking you, do you know the weapons he has given you to push back darkness? I love this so much. What are David's weapons? Like sticks and stones, bro. Like you're going to fight him with just sticks and stones? David's like, yep. And that's you. That thing that you put just in front of is your secret weapon to push back darkness. You're like, but I just like to make meals. Go push back the darkness by making some meals. There is a fight that requires meal making. Like, I'm just really just skilled administratively. And that administrative gift is a weapon that is going to change the world around you. Once you find your fight and you're like, I cannot believe we are turning the community upside down. You have a unique ability to make money, or you have a voice that speaks in unique ways, or you can just, man, rally people to a cause. Or maybe for you, like I get these really weird dreams at times in the middle of the night and I don't know what to do with them. For some of you, like I just have these strong intuitions about people, and even at Starbucks, I feel like I'm supposed to, but now it's just intuition. I don't know what it is, but once you find your fight, you will discover that he has armed you with exactly what you need to push back darkness and knock down giants. And it may be something you've always said, it's just this. Yeah, it's just. It's just the access and influence I tend to have with people. With sticks, stones, and a sling, the stage is set for the greatest mismatched fight ever. The greatest underdog story of all time. Can we be honest? This guy stands no chance. And by this guy, I mean Goliath! Bless his massive heart. He never stood a chance. And by the way, those of us who are called to fight the darkness, we know that. Jesus has said the kingdom of darkness stands no chance when the church is moving forward, wielding the weapons that are placed in their pouches so they can carry on the work that Jesus came to start. Goliath stood no chance. Oh, poor guy. Poor guy. I can imagine what David must be thinking when people are like, hey, carry a sword and put on some armor. David's like, but why? Why? Oh, your thought I was going down into the valley to fight that giant on his turf, on his terms? David is like, no! Oh, you assumed I was going to go fight him in hand-to-hand combat? He'll beat me every time. Why? That would be dumb. Why would I do that? Goliath weighs 400 pounds. With all of his armor. How slow is Goliath? David is 175 pounds, soaking, spry, springy, like a gazelle. People are like, you're too tiny, David. Thankfully, this is not a height war. Oh, you're not strong enough. Thankfully, I have no plans of wrestling that dude. But you don't have enough money. I'm not fighting with finances. Goliath stood no chance. The only way he hurts David is if he catches him. David is like, I'd love to see you try. Now go back to his resume. He said, I chased down lions. You think gargantuan over here is going to catch me? Nope. I'm not fighting him on his terms. I'm fighting him on my terms. Using what God has given me. And bless Goliath's heart, it is thought that somebody of his size suffered from a disease known as pituitary gigantism. Symptoms of that included double vision. Could not see very well, which is one of the reasons I think he had a dude leading him. And once you got close enough, you're dead. David is like, poor guy can't see. How is he going to catch David? And the worst thing of it all, this kid, David, has no friends. He has spent the better part of the last 6 years by himself with no Facebook, no Snapchat, no Game Boy, no Switch. He passes time by target practicing with a sling and a stone until he has become masterful enough to hit a fig from 20 feet away with the kind of velocity that makes a lion back up. Now you tell me, what chance did Goliath ever have? This is the enemy's scheme to the church. But you know what could go wrong? What if he drops you from 20 feet? I don't plan to get that close to him. But what if I'm not fighting on those terms, but he will slice you with a sword. I don't plan to come close enough to his sword. Spoiler alert. Down goes Frazier. Goliath loses so badly with one stone. I can imagine David's mad. Like, why did I even take five? Why did I take five? I didn't need five. This guy goes down. Let me just read a couple of this is 1 Samuel 17:42. As David approached, this is just funny to me. He looked David over when he finally got close enough, and he saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome, and he despised him. This is some middle school stuff right here. You're cute. I hate you. The devil hates you. Simply the fact that you're covered with the beauty of Jesus' blood and righteousness. He despises you anytime he sees you. Ugh. Chosen ones. I hate them. This is so good. And then the story goes on, and Goliath is very upset because David only came with a stick, and he's very offended by this. David eventually kills the guy. We are in a season nationally and globally in which God is raising up some Davids and Davidettes to step out in courage against what's hurting people and dishonoring him. What is that for you? May there be a day when the church never says, I don't know. I don't know what that is. Because we are constantly locked in. What's displeasing God? What's disgracing people? What's threatening people? And what gift has he given me with which to push back the darkness in his great name? And that may be unconventional. It may be unusual. when you start to think about some of the ways he's calling you to do this. In fact, as I was thinking about this, I was thinking about a friend of mine who goes to this church and shared with me maybe a few months ago that God had been stirring like these dreams on the inside. And fire, like burning, like I have to get it out. Like I know I'm called to say it to people, but I don't want to do that. That's going to require some courage. Because it's awkward to say to people, this is the dream I believe God has given me, and I'm supposed to share it with people. What does that even mean? What does that even look like? And as we process that, I was like, I have a perfect opportunity for you to maybe consider doing that in church, in front of God's people. And we went back and forth. It's like, God is calling me to do it, so I've got to do it. And so I'm going to ask Wendy to actually come up here. And if nothing else, I mean, first of all, the courage it takes to walk up those stairs to come and share with y'all should be clapping, but that's not what you, and some of you know Wendy, some of you don't, but if you know Wendy, you're like, what's she doing up there? This is not her dream as a kid to be up in front of people saying things, but man, when the Lord causes something to burn in you, you share it and trust him to do with it whatever he wants. And I know that's kind of been the stirring for you. And so I want to give you a couple of minutes to step into, use one of your weapons to push back darkness here in this house.
So I was seeking God and asking him to reveal himself to me and to give me a piece of his heart. And he did that in many ways, but one of them was a dream that he gave me. And he made it very clear that it wasn't just for me, that I was supposed to share it. And I've been fighting him on it for like a year. So I am just trying to have courage and to obey him. So my dream was that I am in this house, and this house is very familiar, like a place that I've been and that I'm used to. And I'm in the living room, and the living room is full of people. And I cannot see their faces. Like, I don't know who they are, but I know that they feel, I feel very comfortable around them. It's like community and family and friends and just a safe space. And everyone's lying on the couches in the living room and just relaxing by the fire and just very relaxed and comfortable. And in my dream, we all know that it is the day that Jesus is coming back. Mm. And I keep running to the window and checking to see if he's coming, and I'm anticipating it and I'm so excited. And then I realize that no one else is feeling that. They're just lying there and staying beside the fire and seeking comfort over anticipating him and getting excited for him. And God gave me this heavy, heavy sense on my heart. I think it was a piece of his heart of what he feels like for his church that's not anticipating him and preparing for him, and they're seeking comfort over what he's calling us into. And I just feel like he was wanting me to share that.
The beauty of that is you, Wendy, get to throw that stone. How it lands, where it lands, who it stirs, how it stirs, it's now out of your hands. And man, honored by your courage. And now I'm saying to all of us, may the Spirit of God allow the word he's given to do what it's supposed to do in each and every one of us. And may it stir in all of us, like, wait a minute, I have stuff like that. Or wait a minute, like, it could be that. Like, maybe I do have weapons that I'm called to use in the fight he's called me to fight. And so, Lord, I just pray that your Spirit would stir in all of us that place where what displeases you and disgraces people starts to disturb us And as it does, help us not to just shrug it off. Help us to lean in and ask you, Holy Spirit, to reveal to us, what are you calling us to step a little more into? Lord, I pray even now that your Spirit will be stirring in the hearts of your people in this place. That each of us would start to get a sense of what it is for us. Lord, thank you for Wendy, and thank you for the ways that you love us so much that you don't want us to settle into comfort and to lose sight of the fact that time is moving and you are returning and you are calling each of us to step into spaces and ask the question, what do you hope Jesus will find you doing when he returns? Is it this? Or is it fighting with anticipation as we stare out the window looking for your return? And so awaken all of us by your Spirit into the work you're calling us to do. And Jesus, I thank you that you are ultimately victorious over sin and Satan and darkness. Thank you that you are the ultimate Son who got sent on an errand to earth by your Father to come and take on the giant called death that had held humanity captive for years and years and years in fear. And with one rolling away of the stone, you defeated sin and Satan and death, and you set captives free. And now you call us to continue the work that you began, with courage and with clarity. Raise us up to that end. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks so much for tuning in to today's message. We would love to personally invite you to one of our Sunday services at 9 or 10:45 a.m. in the Performing Arts Center at Warsaw Community High School at 1 Tiger Lane in Warsaw, Indiana. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to subscribe and connect with us on social media by following Mission Point CC. You can also contribute to what God is doing through Mission Point. Simply visit missionpoint.net/give and give a gift today. Thanks again for joining us. Have a great week.